I'm Big Sexy Brian Bales from Super Geeky Playdate, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey friends, Jordan Woods Robinson here from AMC's The Walking Dead and Blue Man Group, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, grab some gluten-free, non-GMO popcorn, and let's dive into the world pop culture bliss.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
All right, and welcome everyone. This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We are streaming live, Team PopX, right now on
Hi.
Facebook Live. How in the heck is everybody doing? What is going on?
Oh my gosh, I've had a roller coaster of a weekend. I know you guys did too.
It's been kind of an emotional one for me, Lindsay Badger. I'm not going to lie. I went and saw a particular movie, and there may have been some form of an allergic reaction in this corner of my eye that I really can't describe.
There was a lot of dust in my theater. They were blown around.
I know. I tell you what, this is the first time we're on Facebook Live, so this is kind of cool. And we have a plethora of people hanging out with us. We want to give a shout out to Sean and Antoinette, who is hanging out with us. This is so cool. Thanks for sharing and coming and joining us. You guys are joining us here live on PopX Cast. Austin Burke, what's new in your world?
I haven't spoken for 3 days.
Oh gosh.
I've had my moments of zen and crying alone in my room since I saw this film for the second time. So I'm excited to vent to you guys tonight about how much I just love this movie. Right.
I think we're gonna get it out. We're gonna talk about our feelings.
Yes.
It's like therapy. It's a good therapy session.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay though, Austin, because we're all in the same boat. We have so much we want to talk about. We have an hour to do it. I think we can do it. I know you guys are ready for it. So let's go ahead and roll right on in and just open this thing up, shall we? All right. So guys, welcome to PopX Cast. If you're joining us for the first time on Facebook Live, what's up? So where science fiction meets pop culture, I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. Now, we'd like to welcome everyone joining us right here on the PopX.live and Facebook Live channel. Now, come hang out with us and join the conversation over here live on Facebook Live, PopX Cast.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. If you guys missed episode 75, where we gave our Avengers Infinity War predictions, be sure to check that out and look at our official website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX. Yes.
Yeah, make sure you definitely go and check that out. Hey guys, I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky Okie. And after the show tonight, if you guys would like to head over to Google Play or iTunes and subscribe to the podcast version of this show, make sure you click the subscribe button and drop us some nice words and maybe a 5-star rating, if you so please. That would be super duper amazing.
Sorry, I'm animated when you're doing that, Lindsay. I can't help it. I just kind of find. I'm going to shut up now. Just go ahead and roll the news intro. All right, I'm just going to shut up now because I'm so excited. Let's just do it. All right, here we go. Go, don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. I'm sorry.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
Oh, yes. Don't you just love that little retro intro? Now, you know, leading off the top of the list this week, we do kind of have something pretty rad coming up next weekend, next Saturday, May the 5th. If you have a cool comic book shop near you, I highly recommend you do this. They do this every year. It's a really cool event. It's called Free Comic Book Day. If you've never been to Free Comic Book Day, do yourself a favor. Get on Google. Find your local shop. Go to your local shop in the morning and enjoy. They give you free comic books for coming in.
Yeah.
And Lindsay, you've been to a couple of times at the one in Oklahoma, right?
In the last 2 years, the same store. And our store goes above and beyond for this day. It is like the most epic nerd day of the year. I make sure it's always marked on my calendar. Our particular store, now I'm not saying every store does this, this is my disclaimer, will have people dressed up like comic book characters. They'll have a moon bounce or face painting. They even have the Jedi Academy, like you would see in one of the Disney parks. They do that. And the kids love it. And they have it for like, I don't know, a couple of hours. And you can come and get your free comic books, take advantage of all of the fun activities. It's just a really good short day out for the kids as well as the adults enjoy it. It's just amazing.
And last year when I went to Free Comic Book Day, I actually cosplayed as Austin Burke, if you can believe it. And everybody thought I was actually him, so it was kind of cool. I said, hey, this is the Burkinator.
I was like,
oh, wait, we both have the same name and we're first. Okay, never mind. It just
hey, guess what, Joe? Okay. You don't have to cosplay as me this year because guess who's going to be in Orlando? Come on, baby.
Yeah, just 2 days, man. In just 2 days, it's happening. So the Burke twins are reuniting. It's a long story. There's going to be a lot of bromance, a lot of uncomfortable moments for some people that aren't used to that kind of love.
You shouldn't.
There might even be a secret episode coming out.
There could be. There could be a secret PopX episode. All right. So, Austin Burke, lead us into the next one there, if you don't mind.
Let's get into something that I just love talking about, and that's Stranger Things, guys. So the third season of Stranger Things is not slated to hit Netflix until 2019. Why? As production on the popular series has only just begun this week, one of the series producers claims fans should be confident in a fourth season in the show's future.
Nice.
Sean Levy even hinted that the series could return or could run for 5 seasons total. He said, I will say we have a good sense of stuff that happens in season 4. Season 4 is definitely happening. There's very much the possibility of a season beyond that one that's currently undecided. So what do you guys think? Is Stranger Things maybe overstaying its welcome, or could you just take as many seasons as you could possibly imagine?
How dare you say such a thing?
Well, I think personally, like any story that we've seen in the Netflix streaming Hulu genre, Amazon Prime or whatever, I think there has to be a culmination, like 4 or 5 seasons, to round out that one particular series. Mm-hmm. And I think I think if you get into like The Walking Dead and you're going into the ninth season, it's just like you're like okay, it's more zombies.
Still going?
It's more zombies and walkers. Yeah. Oh, there's Rick Grimes. He's Rick. He's got an axe. Okay, there goes another zombie. And so, I mean, it was great. It was, don't get me wrong, that the whole zombie hype is still very much alive and well, especially if you're filming in Sonoya, Georgia. But I think there's certain things that can overstay their welcome, and I don't want Stranger Things to be that particular series that just gets uncomfortable after season 4. Season 4 can be good. Season 4 can be great. But season 5 needs to be the finality. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I think right now there is still a lot of excitement. There's still a lot of story to tell. Mm-hmm. Depending on how 3 ends, will tell us how much a 4 is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And anything beyond that, we'll just have to wait and see. They may develop new directions that make us even love it more. So
that's true.
You never know. It's up in the air. So I won't say they were going to overstay their welcome because I really, really love this show. But
Who doesn't?
I could change my mind. Yeah.
Yes. So. I just want to say for the while we're on the Stranger Things topic, some particular individual that's a really close friend of mine gifted me with a 4K copy of Stranger Things season 1.
Oh, very nice.
If you've not seen Stranger Things in 4K, oh my God. Just gonna drop that right there. Okay, Lindsay Badger, you can go to the next one.
All right, well, we're gonna take it back to outer space because that's a fun place to hang out. Star Trek news for you guys. Star Trek Discovery has officially recast the role of Captain Christopher Pike. Anson Mount will take over the role of the captain of the Enterprise in Star Trek Discovery season 2. Mount played Black Bolt in Marvel's Inhumans and also starred in AMC's Hell on Wheels. Mount commented on the news by tweeting, "Cat's out of the bag. Yep, I've officially joined Starfleet.
Wow.
A dream I've always had since around age 8 when I first discovered TOS syndicated on my local access channel in Middleton, Tennessee, and couldn't be more excited about playing Pike. What an honor to play a captain on a Starfleet ship in any series.
Yeah.
You are a part of an elite select few that is going to be forever legendary for all Star Trek nerdy people.
And I like the chance of redemption, too, because as you said, this guy played Black Bolt in Humans. And while I think he was actually pretty good in the role, the show itself is a big flaming turd. So I just think that he gets a chance here to kind of bring his heart to a brand new role. And the show is well received. So I'm excited to see what they do for another season.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge fan. Now, I didn't get to finish Star Trek Discovery. I was about 5 or 6 episodes in, and then life happened, and then springtime, you get busy, and and now we're up to Infinity War and Black Panther and everything else that's going on. I'm just like, I can't catch up, guys. There's too much saturation in the market right now. Yeah, just have to pull back a little. But anyway, that's another podcast for another day, by the way. But moving on with the news here, April the 18th was a huge day for DC comic fans with the Action Comics number 1000. Now, I was actually lucky to get my copy of that as well, and marking not just a major milestone issue for the series, but the 80th anniversary of Superman's first appearance as well. Now, the landmark issue features several stories from various writers from Superman's history, and one of the stories made a major change to the Man of Steel's history. Now, also, DC revealed a series of variant covers for this must-have issue, and it kind of was capturing the look and feel of the Man of Steel throughout different eras of his 80th year run, and a hardcover deluxe issue as well, which Mr. Ippolito down here got a copy of that hardcover issue.
Ooh,
now, if you look at it, the one on the bottom row with the second one from the left, with that's the 80s one. I don't know what series. Look at this. Series just decided to go off on me. Siri, you're stupid. What the heck?
Simmer down.
Go home, crazy, Siri. Yeah. You're drunk. It must have been Superman. I don't know what. Thanks, Apple. Appreciate it. Anyway, I got the 80s cover. Is long story short, I got the 80s cover of Superman. Cool. So it was really awesome to be able to get that. And then I got the standard cover as well. But did any of you all pick up 1000? Oh, look at that. Mike is holding it up.
Oh, dude.
Look at that.
Come on.
Look at that. Come Mike on. In real time, ladies and gentlemen. Mike in real time.
Awesome.
We have real
it's
time.
Like he knew.
You know, I think he may have had that queued up. I'm just saying.
Hey, he did.
I think he may have had that queued up. I don't know. All right. So
I was just going to say, Joe, the biggest devastation for me in the last couple of weeks, other than the movie we're about to talk about, was I was ready. I had my plans in place. Me and Joe had discussed a comic book shop locally to me because Joe used to be through this area. Mm-hmm. And it turns out I had to go into work that day. So aww. I did not get to get a copy. And I was so angry. But hopefully, Joe, when I come down, I can take a look.
Let me tell you something. I'll just go pick you up one on Wednesday. How about that?
I'm
best friends with the local comic book shop owner, Daniel, here at Coliseum of Comics. I think I can hook you up. I got you a copy.
It's good to know people.
You're the best.
Seriously, go on. No, keep going.
Let's right. go. Okay, so next up, get ready for a whole new dash of nostalgia as the action figure line Mask, I can't believe I'm saying this, is headed to the big screen. Paramount has reportedly made a deal with F. Gary Gray, and if you guys don't know, I think he's a genuinely good filmmaker, to direct a live-action masked film. The film would be produced by Hasbro and Gray and is currently in search of a writer. Mask, which stands for Mobile Armored Strike Command, begins as a series of toys and an animated series in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. Then the general premise of the franchise is that Mask is an underground task force led by Matt Tracker, who tries to hunt down the criminal organization Venom. So this is something that I believe has been prime for a big screen adaptation for a long time. What do you guys think of this news?
Well, as a kid growing up in the 80s, let me just stop right there.
Mask.
But I'm just saying, it was one of those things. I would wake up, get my bowl of Fruity Pebbles, and sit in front of that TV at 9 o'clock in the morning and flip it onto the television and watch Mask. And it was always like Masters of the Universe and then Mask right after that. And then at 10 o'clock, you would have the Incredible Hulk and Lou Ferrigno. It was like, I don't want to leave this spot. This is my euphoria. You know, it's just like so awesome. But now the fact that they're making this, oh my gosh, dude, that's, I hope it's done well.
This was a boy cartoon, so I really don't recollect any of that.
But it's a daggone mountain that transforms into a station. I mean, come on.
When I first saw this news article, I was like, they're making a movie about Jim Carrey and the Green guy. Yeah, you know, that's exactly where my brain went. But then I was like reading it more and I was like, oh, this is totally more like G.I. Joe than comedy.
See, so, my friend over at Retro Blasting would definitely like totally be approving of this right now.
Yeah,
you know,
he would geek out about that.
What I'm saying? Because he's like on that level. He has the entire collection of Mask figures in their original condition.
Oh my God.
But anyway, I digress. Moving along with the news.
How about some Avengers news?
Ooh. Yeah.
I like that.
In Avengers Infinity War, Thanos' Infinity Gauntlet allows him to harness the power of the Infinity Stones, making him the most fearsome and powerful being in the entire universe. Now, NASCAR driver Ryan Blaney might be trying to harness just a little bit of that power with his own Infinity Gauntlet gloves. Blaney took to Twitter yesterday to share a photo of himself in the driver's seat.
Oh, that's
wearing
cool.
A pair of gloves designed to look like that.
That's awesome.
And yes, those gloves do have all the Infinity stones.
Look at that. That's race car Infinity Gauntlet gloves, y'all.
If you guys are comic book nerds and NASCAR nerds, because I know they exist,
I'm freaking out right now.
This is like, how can I get my hands on a pair of these? I know this is what's happening right now.
I gotta say,
well, remember in the legit Olympics when the skier dressed like Captain Marvel? You guys remember that? I remember marketing that. Marvel and the Olympics. This is like NASCAR and just the ultimate marketing machine, man. I love it.
Well, I do have to say this on the record from all of us here at PopX, Mr. Ryan Blaney, God bless you for donning the Infinity Gauntlets in the next. Oh, yes. Yes. We applaud you on your NASCAR efforts as you go around in circles a long time for 500 miles.
Don't forget to use your blinker when you turn left.
Oh, my God. You're horrible. No, but funny at the same time. All right. So I get the privilege of bringing this next one. This is kind of cool. Marvel Studios Avengers Infinity War has entered the record books. Holy cow. Are you ready for this? With an estimated global opening of... Breathe. $630 million. Boo. Yeah, that just happened. So making it the highest global opening weekend of all time without even counting China. It opens there on May the 11th. That's next week, a week and a half from now.
China.
Now, the previous worldwide opening record holder was The Fate, The Fast and the Furious. That was at 540. Really, Fast and Furious? Oh, my God. I can't really believe that. Why? Domestically, the film debuted at $106 million on Friday, number two of all time, continued to $83 million on Saturday, and number one of all time, and an estimated $61 million on Sunday, number one of all time, for a domestic opening of $250 million, which marks the highest opening weekend of all time, beating Star Wars The Force Awakens at $248 million. The $630 million means that the Marvel Cinematic Universe now has amassed I can't believe I'm getting ready to read this, the $15.39 billion mark. Did I just read that right? Has amassed 15.39 billion to date. Black Panther also just passed Star Wars. Holy cow. Black Panther also just passed Star Wars The Last Jedi this weekend to claim the number 9 spot of all time on the global list with $1.333 billion.
Now, if I remember correctly, okay, first of all, that's a whole lot of clamps.
God bless.
Second of all, I remember correctly, we were discussing this last week, and you guys came up with some guesses about what you thought the numbers would be.
We did.
What was my guess?
What was the guesses, Lindsay?
Does anybody remember?
I don't remember the exact ones. I want to say 275 was a max guess.
It was. Yeah, I do remember that number, 275.
My original prediction was like 260.
Yeah. I was going to say 245. But that's close.
Because I knew it was going to – I was hoping it would pass The Force Awakens, and I love The Force Awakens, but I just think this movie deserves every recognition in the world. But the fact that it did it – but we don't know. Remember, these are estimations. So tomorrow morning, it could come in, and it could go – they're actually saying right now they think it went over the estimation, right? So it could come in and beat Force Awakens by – instead of a couple million, it could beat it by 10 million. We just don't know yet. But the fact that this made that much money – listen, guys, Fate of the Furious did it with China. Mm-hmm. Avengers Infinity War passed it by that much without China. So when China comes along, I'm telling you right now, if any movie ever has the opportunity to at least get close to Avatar, because Avatar made $2.7 billion worldwide, I don't think it'll ever be caught, but my God, this thing is going to be very close, especially with word of mouth, which is important. But you have to also look at this. I'm sorry, I keep talking.
No, you're fine, man.
Deadpool 2 and Han Solo are coming out in 3 weeks, back to back. So is that going to affect it enough to keep it from reaching a point like, you know, Avatar or Force Awakens total? Or is it just going to keep gobbing in the money? We just don't know.
Well, I think honestly, that's why Marvel Entertainment decided to push back the release to April the 27th, yes, other than May the 4th, absolutely, because that gives them an extra week of money profiting to be able to make before Deadpool drops. And then, of course, you know, we all know these are three Disney movies now. These are three Disney properties that are owned franchises. Mm-hmm. And so it's just going to be a cash cow for them because they're going to end up going, you know, if you're going to the theater on a Friday or Saturday night, let's go watch Infinity War. Let's do a double date. Let's go watch Deadpool 2 and an Infinity War. I would do it. That would sound like something me and Alex would do, my wife. So I'm just saying.
Wow.
Yeah.
You could level it up and go to a drive-in that has both of them.
They still have drive-ins?
Can you guys remember a time when the movie theaters were showing three massive blockbusters of what I think are going to be high-quality films on the level of Solo, Deadpool 2, and Infinity War? I don't think it's ever happened.
I think this might be a first time in history because usually the summer slot is only slated for number one. We've only had – I mean, we should technically only be having Avengers Infinity War May the 4th, technically.
Yes.
And that would be it. You know, that would be the climax. Go ahead, Austin.
And 2 weeks later, Incredibles 2. So you know Infinity War is still going to be in theaters. Four.
And Incredibles 2 is another comic book property.
You know why? You know why? There's no competition. It's Disney versus Disney versus Disney versus Disney. Disney doesn't care how many of their blockbusters are in their theater at the same time.
I think the only reason, because Deadpool 2 is still Fox. So Fox is still in competition with Disney.
Yeah.
But I think... Putting it that – I get it. I understand because it's Deadpool 2. It's a different crowd. It's an R-rated movie. But just why would you choose to go in between three massive Disney movies? It's an odd choice to me. It really is. But, they're smart.
Yeah.
Their fan base for Deadpool, though, is hardcore.
And it's very different than like a kids movie or a Solo movie. It's an R-rated, hardcore, you know, raunchy joke. So I think the crowd's going
to
be.
And you won't be taking your kids to that after the school. I'm telling you that right now.
Some people will, though.
Yeah, you know what? And that's really sad. I got to say that for a minute, Lindsay. When I went to my Deadpool movie premiere, there was fathers bringing their underage children in. And I was just like,
Don't do that.
And I was just like, you know, and maybe shame on me for being there, for being a man of faith and going, I don't care. You know what? It each is to his own. Whatever.
It's a parent. You parent you and I'll parent over here.
There you go. Lindsay Badger, you got the last one of the week. And this is kind of a rumor now. Don't take us for granted on this one.
All right. We're going to drop some rumor.
All right.
So just prepare yourself. It might be all bull hockey later. All right.
Bull hockey.
Reported by comicbooknews.com, they claim, according to the sources inside Disney, that the title for next year's Avenger film will be Avengers Endgame.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Mm-hmm.
The name may sound familiar, as the very words were uttered by Doctor Strange when he was cycling through the many outcomes on how Thanos' wrath would end. What are your thoughts?
Wow.
On the new Endgame title.
Well, I don't know if this is somebody fabricating speculation, fabricating facts from someone, from a friend of a friend that they know that works in the industry who's probably nothing more than a pencil pusher. I don't know.
I think we can do better, Marvel. I think we can do better.
But Endgame, it could work if it was played out. But honestly, Avengers Reassemble maybe would be a better term. Avengers Assemble, Avengers Reassemble. I don't know. Austin, what do you think about it?
Well, my thing is the Russo brothers came out and said the spoiler of the fourth, or the title of the fourth movie is a spoiler for the third film. So I don't think Endgame would really be a spoiler because we kind of knew these were the last two Avengers movies with the main cast all assembled anyway. I don't see that as the title. Now, I don't hate it. I don't love it. I'm kind of like, okay, cool. But I don't know if that is the spoiler that the Russo brothers were talking. I'm still kind of on Joe's train. I'm kind of on the Infinity Gauntlet.
And I saw this come through this morning on my feed. It was from cosmicbooknews.com. And it's, it is one of the credible sources, but not as much as to par with Comic Book News and SuperheroHype.com and all those other ones. So I take it with a grain of salt. But you know what? Mm-hmm. It is something to talk about, and it's something to actually start planning for May 2019. So,
jeez.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we just said that. So, all right, guys, we have reached the halfway point of the show. You know what that means. We are getting ready to enter the world of Avengers Infinity War. Now, I will give you a warning ahead of time. This is going to be spoilers. And I can't stress this enough. If you have not seen the film, we are not going to be responsible for what we're about to say. So if you want to hear spoilers, you can continue. This is going to be a spoiler-heavy show. And with that said, I'm going to go ahead and roll our spoiler alert sound. So don't go anywhere.
Danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
You have been warned. All right. So, oh my God. How the heck do we start this? I mean, it's just
where do we dive into this?
All right.
Well, do you want to recap predictions and kind of elaborate on that?
That's a good starting point, Lindsay, because you were so kind to write some of these down from a couple weeks ago's show. Now, how accurate were we on some of the predictions based on the characters and all of that? Like,
I really did break notes.
Look, she really did take notes on the episode.
I really did take notes. I'm a good student. Okay. So I will have to say that we were on point for a lot of things.
Okay.
A lot of the predictions that we discussed were for part two.
Okay.
So they're still inconclusive as of right now, or they were part one, part two. So it's kind of up in the air still. I think Austin is a movie whisperer because he got about 80-90% of his predictions correct.
Yeah.
Which is just mind blowing to me. I swear he was in on writing the script for this. I swear.
Yeah.
But Joe, you and I were not far off on some of our points either. And a lot of us agreed together on some of the outcomes as well. So let's start talking about Loki. Since it's at the beginning of the movie anyways, that would be it's always great to start at the beginning.
Correct.
So the first question was, does he give up the Tesseract willingly or is he forced? And I pretty much said he's a selfish sucker that doesn't do anything that doesn't benefit himself, which I was surprised that I was wrong. I was wrong. He was trying to save his brother, and I don't think there's any people left of his kind to save. So, and he really wanted to take out Thanos. So he actually attempted to try to murder him by playing his regular card of I pledge allegiance to.
Didn't work.
And Austin, you pretty much was on point with that. You were really, really close. You were thinking that he was going to save the Asgardians. Obviously, we didn't know they were all going to be dead.
Yeah.
Which way? Wait, let's stop right there for a second. Asgardians. Yeah. Last time we see on this ship, we see Valkyrie standing amongst a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is Valkyrie?
Well, the thing that I heard the second time I went back and watched the movie and I paid attention is that at the midpoint of the film, Thor says, Thanos wiped out half my people. So he didn't wipe out all the Asgardians. Half of them went with Thanos, or went with Valkyrie and Korg, and only the people, the dead people we saw on the ship, were it was only half of the Asgardians. So the rest are somewhere else. But of course, he snaps his fingers, and half of those get wiped out, but there are still Asgardians.
Now, I do want to say that was my prediction for the cliffhanger, and I was correct.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The finger snap.
Absolutely.
I knew that was going to be the cliffhanger.
Yes.
Anybody that's a fan of comics and you have read Infinity Gauntlet before know that that was probably going to be the moment when the film ends, and I was right on for that one. So,
cool. So moving on to Thor's hammer that we discussed, Joe had mentioned about the toy line coming out and giving out some teasers, perhaps, by the construction of all that, and then Austin dropped the mic by referring to Groot and his little vine handle thing. And man, were you not on point with that? That was so
well, now,
crazy.
If you think about it, I actually went back to Target this weekend and I looked at the Stormbreaker and I didn't really buy it because, you know, I may have bought it. All right, shut up. Anyway, so, I mean, it's just one of those things. But I looked at it, it does look like Groot's hands.
It does.
I mean, I'm like, Austin, how did you pull that one out of your butt, man? That was an awesome pull for you.
It's like
when you know Groot has to have a moment in the movie, right? And I feel like throughout the film, I'm like, you know, Groot's not really doing much right now.
No.
The parts with Groot were funny, don't get me wrong, but his character didn't really serve a purpose. And then when we got to that moment, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling kind of iffy on my prediction here because he's still kind of sitting to the sideline. But the second that Thor is laying there and Groot turns away, looks right at him, I said, he is about to chop his arm off, man. And sure enough, and you have, I mean, I think that made the weapon even more powerful. I truly
do. From the elbow down.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's how it is. Oh my God, it was awesome.
That was awesome.
That was so good.
Was there any more predictions?
There was a, not for the Thor's hammer, but if you want to talk about Vision real quick, there was a couple of different theories going on with this. Some was on the death train. Some was not on the death train.
Was he in a Wakanda hiding?
Yeah.
I say I was the only one on the pure death train. I swear he was going to die. I win. Yeah. I get like a high five for that. But the rest of the storyline, Austin had on point. He's hiding in Wakanda. Sure, he finds a way to remove the stone. And we still don't know. We talked about the speculation of twins because there's supposedly a theory of a rumor of casting for twins. We still don't know. That's a future prediction that we'll have to wait and see if it
could
comes
be next
to fruition.
Year too.
But between Austin and myself, we nailed it. So high five, buddy, for that. And Joe, we'll have to see your prediction if the consciousness of Vision lives on through his children. That would be
We'll have to see. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, and then obviously we didn't see anything of Adam Warlock. I think we're going to wait until Guardians.
And you know what? They may not even bring Adam Warlock into the storyline until Guardians 3.
I read a rumor. And actually, no, I didn't read a rumor. It's not a rumor. The writers for Infinity War pondered on Adam Warlock the most. That's the article that came out. They actually had a version of the script where they introduced him and they said it felt so cluttered that they had to remove him from the script. But Joe, you were far off because Adam Warlock was at one point a part of this film. It's just, it was kind of like a first round of the script and they had to remove him, you know.
And that's an awesome point. And also death wasn't included as well. And Thanos' obsession to court death because he was in love with her. I know we were actually discussing this pre-show, you know, Thanos actually became infatuated with love because death, you know, in love with death rather, because death in the comics is a female, and he had this mindset of universal genocide of 50%. But instead of going planet to planet, we saw him do that to Gamora's home planet wipe them all out. And Gamora was the only one left. So instead of wasting all of his time and energy from hopping to world to world to world, he found out about the stones. And then once he got the stones, boom.
Yep.
And so it is endgame. So that was...
Well, you had mentioned about death and seeing other villains possibly pop up. We had discussed that too last week. And both you and Austin and Joe had mentioned something about wanting to see Red Skull appear. But we didn't know what role he was going to be playing. We thought maybe he would be part of his army or somehow playing as the battling against the Avengers.
I'm telling you.
The role he plays in this movie took everybody by surprise.
It was awesome. He was the keeper of the Soul Stone, man.
Nobody expected to see him on Vermeer and to be able to basically take Thanos by the hand and say, this is how you get the stone. I mean, this is really his sole role, and it was just perfect little nod to all of the people speculating whether he was dead or alive.
We knew he was alive.
But he doesn't overpower the role of villain in this movie, which I think is very important.
But the fact that Red Skull is still alive.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I have to say about this subject. First off, the biggest reaction I had in the theater was when Red Skull appeared. I shook Madison's shoulder and I slapped her, and she's slapping me back because we had just watched the Captain America trilogy and we're like, oh my God. So I'm going through the credits and I'm like, I can't believe Hugo Weaving. It's a celebrity impressionist. Hugo Weaving didn't come back for this movie.
Really?
It's a celebrity impressionist. A comedian played the part of Red Skull.
Wow.
And he flipping nailed it.
Wow.
I mean, Hugo Weaving came out and said he did not like working on the first Avenger. So I'm like, okay, I want to see Red Skull back, but I don't think he's going to come back. No, Marvel just said, hey, buddy, we got this guy. And guess what? Yeah. Did he not just sound?
I didn't know. I didn't think that was. You just blew my mind, man.
That's pretty awesome.
It's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Let's touch on Tony and Pepper. We speculated about engagement, marriage. Are they not? I think we all pretty much came to conclusion they were at least engaged because of the picture that we had shown has her wearing a gigantic rock on her finger. That was undeniable that there was at least an engagement going on. They did discuss that there was marriage coming. Tony even referenced having a dream about having a kid, which is also a nod to his cousin in the comics. Mason, I believe, was the name. That's a little nerd nugget for you.
I like that.
So we pretty much all nailed it on that prediction. So high five to everybody on that. Points for everybody.
So I want to take a minute now and just kind of let us each have our own elaborate conversation. And Mike's going to join us here very shortly and share his thoughts as well. I think, honestly, with all due respect, I want to go first really quick because...
Do it, man.
I just want to say, going into the theater, this is probably the pinnacle of my life because I don't know how deep I want to share this, but the comic books are a very special part of my life, and anybody that's close to me knows how deep that runs in my life and career. And when I first... Iron Man 1 first came out, it was in 2008, and I had not met Alex yet, my future wife. And this whole world was opened up to me into like actually seeing for the first time Tony Stark as the way I read him in the comics in the 80s and 90s. This very, you know, Bruce Wayne-ish type character, ritzy, glamour, women, and alcohol and all this stuff. And just seeing Iron Man, it kind of bore something in me and created this whole new level of love and passion for Marvel and the cinematic universe. Let's fast forward to 10 years now. Let's fast forward to this past weekend. Seeing the culmination of that 10 years come to fruition with all the seeds being planted of Thanos and the Infinity Stones and all these like end scene credits of wondering what's going to come next and then the grin from Thanos and we just see all this stuff and it just becomes like the finality of it all. And it was, for me, it was a very beautiful thing. There was a lot of in the comic books, and I've read Infinity Gauntlet probably about three or four times through and through. And I read it just previously before the film came out. And I knew kind of some of the elements that they were going to adapt, but I knew some of the elements that they were going to keep in, they weren't going to keep in as well. And of course, like Adam Warlock, I mean, it's a very questionable thing. But for me, I think the Russo brothers managed to get all of these heroes on the screen, and I kind of felt that it was equal time with everybody. I kind of felt that there was a great balance in how Rocket Raccoon and Thor were interacting, and how the craziest combinations you would never expect on screen acting out. It was just totally awesome. And for me, I think just seeing all of that come to fruition and seeing Thanos, it was more of a story told from the perspective of Thanos himself, if you think about it, because we already know who he is, and now we get to see what he's doing, his motives, his purpose, his drive, and we see the hero's reaction to that. And I got to tell you, as a comic book nerd, someone who's passionate about comic books, seeing all this come to life and looking at Thanos on the screen, I kind of felt like he was a real entity. I know he's CGI. I know it's Josh Brolin behind his suit, but it just the hairs, the pigments, just everything just come to life on Thanos. And it was just so amazing to see that. And there were so many moments I was on the screen and I was just like, wow, that just happened. There's the Iron Spider. Holy cow. And he's mind blown. Hello. And so fast forward, now we're getting up to the end of the film for me. And the moment that I knew was going to happen, that had to happen, that had to be the cliffhanger, was when he got the Soul Stone and he did the final snap. I was very cautious on how that was going to happen because he did it. And I thought it was done beautifully. I thought it was executed beautifully. I thought that it was the perfect cliffhanger to a summer blockbuster to make you want to come back and see the finality of it in 2019. And for me, I thought there was a great balance. I had some dialogue issues, some very small dialogue issues. There was a couple of lines, I think, that Black Widow had said that was just like, don't know about that one. But you know what? I look past that because the effort put forth was very gutsy, was very, had never, honestly, never been done before. I mean, have you ever, can you name a film where this many top A-list actors from Hollywood are in one giant movie at the same time for a 2.5-hour film? Nope. I've never seen that before. But we all, nope. I kind of got the impression that even though there was so many superheroes on the same, on the screen at the same time, there was a nice balance to it. There was the leads. You know, you had your Doctor Strange, you had your T'Challa, you had your Iron Man, you had Steve Rogers. Those were kind of your, and Thor, you kind of had your leads, which were kind of, and then Thanos, can't forget him. And then it was just a really great effort. I thought it was, I was just like praying. I was like, oh, I hope this is not going to be like so many heroes on the screen at one time. I just hope it's not going to suck, but it didn't. And that's what happens when you rest this project in the hands of the Russo brothers. You get something that is truly satisfying. And I'm okay with Adam Warlock not being in it. I'm okay with Death not being in it. Because honestly, it's really not needed. The story is about Thanos, if you understand. So I honestly, I want to save my review for the end, but that was my take on it. And I will say this before we move on. I'm going to let Mike share next. The moment when Peter Parker was getting ready to disintegrate and he was looking into Tony, honestly, that was, I was going in there with the notion, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to get emotionally invested into this movie. But when I saw Tom Holland's performance and acting, it's like, it's Tony, God. I don't want to go. I was just like,
you're gonna make me cry again.
Oh my God. Did that just happen? I mean, it was like, seriously, that was the moment literally that I kind of felt that I was connected to this universe. Man. I mean, I don't know what it is about Tom Holland and his portrayal of Peter Parker, but it is spot on. Oh, probably the best Peter Parker to ever don the tights, I'm telling you.
Yes.
So I'm going to shut up now. That was my rant.
Can I interject for just a second? We have an awesome comment by Mr. Wagner, Los Santos. He says, Joe makes anyone feel passionate about Marvel Comics, and that could not be any truer.
Oh,
your
man.
Passion in the way that you explain how the movie goes, how you feel about the movie, your real life experience as a child coming to adulthood, it really draws everybody in. And I just want to go to a comic book store and buy everything now. Because
Wagner, you know we love you, man. I really do. I love
that
guy.
Sweet comment, and I just had to share that with everyone.
Thank you. And also, too, before I let Mike go, did anybody notice that the trailer? There was additional trailer footage that was never in the movie, like Hulk and Iron and Captain charging. Was that footage?
I was waiting for it. I think that is one of the most brilliant things Marvel has ever done. And they kind of started this trend in the Thor Ragnarok trailer when they never showed his eye patch. He had two eyes in that scene that he actually had one. But my goodness, Marvel misled the heck out of us. Do you remember the first Avengers trailer when it showed the Hulk saving Tony Stark?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I was so angry. They have learned from their mistakes. They took out part of the Iron Spider suit. They showed that. They misled us. They completely gave us a different movie than we got, but still made us want to go see it. And I think that is, although I was looking for
I
that
thought it was, I was kind of like, I wanted to see Incredible Hulk charging into battle. Mind you, Incredible Hulk got his rear end handed to him. And I was a little disappointed that Big Green, you know, didn't get to.
Yeah, we didn't see a lot of him.
All right, Mr. Michael Ippolito, your time is ready, my friend. Are you ready to tell us your thoughts? Now, you just saw this movie like just a few hours ago, man. It's fresh.
No way. Yeah, I'm about three hours out of this.
Well, drop it, man. Drop it like it's hot. Let's hear it.
It's still taking me some time to process everything that's happened and just the amount of stuff that I've seen. It just to... You know, and I'm just going to kind of piggyback on a bunch of stuff that you said, because basically what you had said was just exactly what I was thinking. The flow of this film was just unbelievable. It was the lead characters had their amount of screen time, and, you know, the secondary characters had the limited amount of screen time, and just switching between the different situations that were going on, basically everything was just, like I said, evenly balanced. And that was my biggest fear too, was seeing so many characters on the screen at once and to be this whole big mosh of characters. But the way the Russos handled this, and of the 10 years, I mean, this is perfect for 10 years of films that we've seen all come together as one, you know, to the basically the ending of, you know, the Avengers as we know it, and to move on to the next phase of, you know, what's going to be coming next was just, you know, unreal. And to see the way some of the deaths, I didn't expect Loki so fast. I would have expected, you know, a little bit later in the film. And the Gamora one was kind of tough for me because I'm a big Guardians fan. And to see that and to see what happened to Nebula, you know, to be stretched out like that by Thanos. And so it was kind of some tough stuff to see there. And then, of course, you know, the end where they all just go into dust, you know, you know, a lot of top characters just fading away, and that's what the hardest part of processing all this is, just to see that, you know. And you can't leave out the excellent cameo by Stan Lee as the bus driver.
Yep. I'm glad he was in there.
Yeah, that was good to see. And I mean, just overall, I just love this film. I'm definitely gonna go see it again, and I just can't wait for the second one. The last part.
Yeah.
And that was the best, to me, I think that was the best post-credit scene I've seen ever out of all the movies.
It was a good one.
And you saw the star and the colors of Captain Marvel, and I was seeing my daughter, and I'm going, oh my God, they just didn't do that right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's happening, but it was.
Mike, what was your, I'm going to ask you the same questions, but two different versions. What was your favorite moment of the film? One that just really brought you a lot of joy? And what was the moment that just blew your mind? You had no idea what was going on. You didn't know what to expect.
Favorite moment was kind of tough because there was a lot of pivotal moments that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to process all.
I put you on the spot. I know
so
I did.
Much.
I know.
Yeah,
I
actually, you did. You kind of threw me off.
I mean, I'm sorry.
I can't find. No, that's fine. I just can't put like a favorite scene. I just overall love this movie.
What about the aha moment? A scene that just blew your mind. You didn't even see it coming. Was there one of those?
Red Skull.
Red Skull.
I didn't expect that. Yeah. And the Soul Stone. I didn't expect that to be that way.
I didn't either. Nobody did, I don't think.
We go a little different. And there was just certain scenes that I found, I found myself focused on it. For some reason, it was when they had Thanos all kind of bound up trying to get the glove, the gauntlet off.
Oh, and, yes.
Peter Quill was in Thanos' face and said, "What happened to her?" And just being right in his face, the two of them together, was just, it had like a strange moment for me. It was just, for some reason, that particular scene, and where, then Thanos was able to break free by him, just keep punching him in the face. And,
it's interesting you say that. It's interesting you say that because Peter Quill's rage was the reason why they weren't able to get the gauntlet off. And that was the pivotal moment for the snap. Think about it.
Yeah.
So Peter Quill, is Star-Lord responsible for what happened? I would say
could be.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Is there anything else, Mr. Mike, you got to want to share? Anything?
I'm trying to quickly run through. It's just so much I'm trying to just think of.
I know it's a huge movie. It's a lot to process, and I still have yet to see my second showing of it. So,
one of the things that kind of threw me off that I caught me by surprise was a lot of, when he had some of the stones in the gauntlet, like where he was able to change, the reality and the time and all that.
So cool.
That kind of threw me off. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, the scene with Vision when he turned back the time to get the stone, even though the stone was shattered.
Died twice.
I was like, holy cow. But the second death, man, he just fell over completely gray, lifeless, like an android. I was like,
he has like a crater in his head where the rock is
real.
When Gamora thought she killed him, she killed Thanos, and then all of a sudden the reality changed. That kind of, threw me off a little bit. I didn't expect that.
It was a movie that messed with your mind, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, if you didn't really watch Doctor Strange going into the film and not understanding the whole time-space bending, you might have been a little like with Ebony Maw, how Ebony Maw was able to kind of bend reality and time and space with Stephen Strange. That's definitely a pivotal movie to watch prior to Infinity War.
Absolutely.
But, Mike, thanks for sharing, dude. You got anything?
Peter Dinklage as a giant. That kind of was unexpected.
Yeah. It was a giant little person. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, awesome. did Thanos cut his hands off? Is that why he had the...
He smelted them.
Yeah.
They were like metal. Like he had shoved them in the smelting bowl is what it looked like.
He said Thanos let him keep his life, but he wanted his hands. So... Yeah. He didn't have the ability to make anything else, but after Thor gave him the talk, of course, they figured it out. So I thought that.
I loved that side journey. It was cool.
And Thor, mind you, took the entire power of a dying star. Just saying that.
God, what a man!
Dang, jeez, gee whiz, hello.
It was good to know where when the movie started, where he already had one of the stones.
Yeah,
and they kind of clarified later on that he went to Xandar. Xandar, got it from the Nova Corps.
Yeah.
It was good to clear that up because they really didn't explain how he got the first one.
Now, I was reading online that they did actually have some scenes that they wanted to include from the Nova Corps.
But I could see that.
It was removed because they just kind of felt it was just not really needed, So, I mean, he is Thanos. He can go and do whatever he wants to do. All right, Lindsay Badger.
The completed version goes to Blu-ray. It's a full 9-hour version.
Blu-ray, what's that? What's Blu-ray, Mike? Yeah. We're going 4K, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That'll be a 4K version.
You know how we roll, me and you. We got that whole brother thing going on, 4K thing. All right, Badges, you're up, Buttercup.
Okay, I'm just going to pull out some real quick little ones. I'm not going to dive too deep because you guys have pretty much said all of the amazing things already. I love the one-liners in this movie. I'm a huge sucker for comedy, even in such a tragic movie. I love all the name calling, and I was talking to Joe about this earlier. They call Squidward.
Oh, that was great. Oh my gosh.
Ebony Maw. Ebony Maw's Squidward.
Awesome. So Star-Lord calls Thanos Grimace from the McDonald's character Grimace. So there's a little pop culture throwback there. I loved whenever Spider-Man said, "This really old movie, Aliens, is like the total battle plan for saving Doctor Strange."
Please don't put your eggs on me. I don't want your eggs.
This is the stuff that makes it so great. It makes you like reconnect with them. I love how Drax called Thor the pirate angel, and everyone was like hovering over him in awe. It was so great. The poor Star-Lord. He was so jealous.
And then Thor was calling Rocket Rabbit.
Rabbit, the whole
my
movie.
Favorite.
And Rocket
my God.
Did not care at all.
He didn't give two.
He was
sweet
very,
rabbit.
Very
come here, sweet rabbit.
Oh my goodness. Oh, and the running eye joke with the prosthetics and Groot and Rocket, and they are always wanting to grab things. And Thor gets a new eye.
Thor got a new eye.
Just Thor gets a new eye.
He wants Winter Soldier's arm.
He wanted Winter Soldier's arm. What is it with Rocket and prosthetics? I don't. It started in part one of Guardians. It's just been a running joke ever since.
And I really enjoyed the conflict between Tony Stark and Star-Lord and how their personalities clashed horribly. He even mentioned Stark called Star-Lord Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon.
Which is really funny. I really enjoyed the whole movie overall. I didn't really have a lot of things to pick apart. The attention to detail, the references back to the comic books, but still keeping it on its own version. It was not an exact copy, but it did do a lot of nods to not only the Infinity Gauntlet comics, but also other comics as well that haven't been picked up on. It's an incredible piece of art that I feel like you should see 10 times just to pick up on all the Easter eggs and references. There's nothing for me to say that this is really bad. I wish that maybe Doctor Strange would have shared the one instance that would have helped us win. That was a little bit frustrating for me, but I kind of understand.
He did at the end. He said this was the only way. Because Doctor Strange persuaded the actual action of events that happened. And he knew that the dying of the 50% was the only way, otherwise Thanos would have destroyed the entire universe.
Yeah, that was a little hard for both me and my husband to swallow, the whole time stone handing over and not disclosing.
It was horrible.
But I'm a huge Doctor Strange fan, so
me too.
I don't hate him. I don't hate him. So good. Please go see it like 10 more times.
Yes.
I want to see it 10 more times.
Austin's almost up to 10. No, I'm just messing with
you. He really is.
Give me 2 weeks.
Other than an actual score, that's pretty much all I've got.
Save your score for the end, though. Save your score for the end.
Sweep up the scraps off the floor that we missed.
All right. Well, is it safe to hand it off to Mr. Austin Burke now?
I think so. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mr. Burke.
I guess it is, guys. Lindsay, there's some things I loved, well, everybody, but what you said about the balance between comedy, humor, and the epic tone, I think that's something that's a little issue going back and watching a movie like Guardians 2.
Yeah.
I had an issue with that movie, especially I think it was a little bit too slapstick comedy for me, especially with a character like Drax. You know, he's kind of, and I like him. I think he's funny. I think Drax is a great character, but they've turned him into a dope that does not do, I mean, in the comics, the guy is a killer. Have we really seen him do anything other than make jokes since the first Guardians? And even in Infinity War, I mean, he's pulling on Thanos' leg. That's it. You know, that's one of my very minor complaints.
Well, he walked head on into the collector's den and it was like gonna...
That was his moment that he should have had. That was his moment.
And even like against Ronan in the first Guardians, he just kind of gets punched really hard and that can't really do much. So I want to see Drax do more, but we're talking Infinity War, guys. So some of the complaints I've been seeing online is, Infinity War has got too many characters. They're balancing 5 or 6 stories at one time. I've never read a comic book. Why am I a critic? Listen, you have to know what this movie is going in. Otherwise, I can see the complaints of there are a lot of characters and there are a lot of storylines to balance, but the Russo brothers had literally no choice to do what they did. And if they wouldn't have balanced it well, like other movies that I'm not going to say, then yes, that would have been one of my complaints. But the beauty about the Russo brothers is we've seen them before in movies like Civil War, balanced storylines, never on this scale. But guys, I had no problems. I mean, I had problems, but no major issues with every single storyline. And for me, I feel like this movie is so ambitious because coming from a world of I judge a film by its technical qualities and the way things are edited, you see a movie like this on this scale, something we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And the way that it's edited, this kind of goes away from the conventional three-act structure of a movie because there's not really three acts. There is in a grand scheme, but you can kind of divide it in, oh, well, this part happens here and this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. But I am so impressed with how this movie is edited. A lot of people are saying it's choppy. That's a valid critique. Mm-hmm. I disagree. Mm-hmm. But when you see something new, I'm sure there were people that didn't like Star Wars when they first saw it at the time because it's so different, right? And it's so brand new. It's something that they had to get on board with. Same thing for a movie like Phantom Menace. People loved it when they first saw it. Now you go back and watch Phantom Menace and those same people coming out of the theaters praising it are saying, wow, that movie's not very good.
Yeah.
But the thing I found about Infinity War is going back and watching it a second time, I thought, okay, I'll either like it a little bit more or a little bit less. I actually think I liked it more the second time I watched it. I had the same emotions. I got the same reactions to certain scenes from certain characters. Mm-hmm. And I think Infinity War is maybe the most epic and ambitious film we've ever seen of anything in cinematic history. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's the best film in cinematic history because it's going to take me at least 20 to 30 watches before I decide on that. But I just think that this thing did every single thing it could to make this what I believe to be maybe one of the best blockbusters of all time. Now, to get into certain moments, you guys hit the moments. I mean, I loved the lines. I think my favorite one, other than Rabbit, was when Groot says, "I am Groot," and Captain America goes, "I am Steve Rogers."
That was hilarious.
Literally one of the funniest. I was cracking up. And
that was a good
one. You know, like, the moments throughout the battle, you've got Okoye, Black Widow, and Scarlet Witch teaming up. I mean, that was great. You've got Winter Soldier holding up Rocket Raccoon, spinning in a circle.
That was awesome.
That was great.
Straight. And the moment. So my crowd the first time and my crowd the second time reacted to different moments. The first time, Captain America's introduction, cheers, screaming from the audience. The second time, he didn't get cheers. What got cheers was when Thor shows up with Rocket on his shoulder and Groot at the end. It's been different both times. And I think something that not a lot of people are talking about in terms of their reviews on Rotten Tomatoes is Alan Silvestri's score of this film. I mean, you bring in the theme song that we know from the Avengers, but my God, Thanos, the moment that got me the most. And this is why I'm starting to kind of compare Thanos to a villain like Darth Vader, is when Thanos comes in at the main end and the Avengers are standing there on Earth, he appears through that portal and you get that shot starting at his waistline mm-hmm. and it's slowly rising to his head and Steve looks at him and Banner goes, "That's him." And you get that dome. Like that might, I have chills just thinking about, because at that moment I'm looking at what Joe said and I said, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you look at what Thor does at the end, throwing that. I mean, Thanos was kind of dead, right? But then he uses that time stone and he snaps his fingers and he goes into the soul stone.
He goes inside it.
The replacement in Gamora, and you start to see our heroes fade away. It's just the most, maybe the most emotional thing. Heart-wrenching, what Joe said. Tom Holland, his performance, all the performances here.
Unreal.
And then something that I thought was cool. First of all, Tony Stark running into battle when you're with him and Stephen Strange. And first of all, those conversations were great. But then you see him, his arc is kind of coming full circle from the beginning of Iron Man 1. I mean, he's what Doctor Strange said he was, a douchebag, right? Mm-hmm. He's not a hero. And now the Earth is being invaded. Who's the first one there? Who is the first one out the door? The woman falls over. He tries to help her up. He is the first one there. That's Tony Stark. And that's why the first time I watched it, I said Thor was probably my favorite hero. I'm kind of on the Tony Stark train now, man, because that was just so many hero moments for him. And then his reaction to Tom Holland's death was incredible. But my personal favorite thing about this movie was Thanos, because it is truly his film. It is truly from the point of view of the villain. And like I said, I'm comparing him to somebody like Darth, or even the Emperor, not even Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. I mean, Thanos is the guy in charge. I would say Ebony Maw was more like his second in command. Because Maw, I'd like to see a movie with him as the villain. That guy is great. But Thanos, and my favorite thing about Thanos is that, first of all, like Killmonger, you can see why he's doing what he's doing. But second of all, and a lot of people are complaining about this, but Thanos had a chance to kill many characters. He had a chance to kill Star-Lord. He had a chance to kill Thor. I mean, there were so many opportunities that he didn't pass up, and I love that. I love that. Not a lot of people love that, but I love that because Thanos isn't killing when he doesn't have to kill, right? Yeah. He killed Loki because Loki betrayed him. Loki failed in the Avengers. The characters that he kills, he has a reason to kill, but when he doesn't have a reason for a character like Star-Lord, he understood why Star-Lord was upset, and he said, I like you. And then he fades back into his portal. And Thanos, he wants to wipe out half the universe. And then in that last shot, you see him. And it reminded me of Luke looking up at the twin suns right before he died in The Last Jedi. But that last shot of Thanos just all alone. And as Mantis said it best, she said Thanos was in pain. He was in agony. But the final, first of all, the final line of the film when Steve Rogers says, oh God, I think that's the best line in the movie. And I'll explain that in just a second. But when Thanos smiles, did anybody else just get chill bumps before it fades to black?
Yeah.
Because I think that was the first moment when Thanos was truly happy, or at least getting there, because he knew that he had done what he had built up for all of this time. Mm-hmm. And then I'll leave you guys with this. My favorite line in the movie was when Captain America, everybody just faded away. They're all sitting there. And Captain America says, oh God. And not just, oh God, what just happened? Oh God, half of the universe has died, but Thanos has kind of declared himself, and I'm not trying to be blasphemous, we're talking a fake universe here, but Thanos has kind of declared himself at this point a god, right? It's, oh God, it's a play on what Thanos did. It's who he's established, that he is now basically the ruler of the universe. He is a god in terms of not getting religious, like I said, but I just found that line. Anything else Steve Rogers would have said, I would have been like, that was a good line, but that line, to me, just really kind of stuck with me. And then, you know, you got to by wiping their tears in the audience. Yeah.
Did you notice, Austin, that at the end of it, when he actually had used the Infinity Gauntlet, that the gauntlet had become melted onto his arm?
Yeah.
And the soul stones were actually very dim. They weren't as glowing and as powerful. Did he use all the power of the soul stones?
He used the majority of it.
That's what it felt like. I mean, nobody has ever utilized the Soul Stone because that was the last one. The Visions was the last one, but that was really the one that nobody, Red Skull said it, nobody has ever used this stone. It's the one stone that, so maybe he used all of its power. Maybe that was what the Avengers are going to try in the next one, because that did fry his gauntlet. So what are his powers at right now? What are they at this moment? Oh, and one thing I forgot to mention real quick, the ending, did that not remind you guys of the rapture, to get biblical again? But when people are disappearing from their cars and the helicopter going into the building and Nick Fury looking around, it felt I was scared.
It did kind of pay homage a little bit to almost a religious aspect. Because I mean, it's tying in to that whole thing where Thanos is declaring himself as God of the universe. Yeah. I mean,
that's when Maria Hill kind of said, I think it's been like an automated controlled, thing. That was like the only logical thing she could come up with.
And I think he's obsessed with the idea that he can create life and he can destroy life, because look what he did to Nebula. He created Nebula.
He did.
That poor girl. He's obsessed with life and death. Death more importantly. And I just thought that that whole scene, Austin, where you're talking about, it's just kind of quiet. And you get the soft glow of the sunset. And Nebula, was it worth it? You know, did you succeed? Yeah. Did you do it? And it was just a really impactful. That was the soul of Gamora talking back to him. And it's like, are you happy you did what you did?
Yeah. Are you happy now?
Are you happy
now? You got what you wanted?
I mean,
oh my God.
That's unreal. I mean, honestly, guys, we can elaborate all night, and we're almost 10 minutes over right now. It's, I do want to share a quick list with you guys. It's something I put together, a complete list. Now, the actual confirmed physical deaths in Infinity War, Loki, Heimdall, Gamora, and Vision. Now, those are definitely all confirmed. Now, disintegrated. Now, this is all of those who were actually on the snap. That would be Black Panther, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Winter Soldier, Falcon, Scarlet Witch, Guardians of the Galaxy. All of them.
All of them.
Nick Fury, Maria Hill, who was part of the S.H.I.E.L.D. entourage.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. chick.
And then, now here's an interesting list I put together. The MIA people during Infinity War. That would be Shuri, Pepper Potts, Captain Marvel, Hawkeye, Ant-Man, Collector, Valkyrie, Wong, and Ned. Where did they go? And then also,
Wong went back to the house,
but we don't know if he's alive.
That's true.
And we don't know. Yeah. Is he part of the 50 that died, or is he part of the 50 that lived? So that's why he's considered MIA. Villains that showed up, we definitely got to see awesome Mr. Red Skull. That was fantastic. And of course, if you don't know who the Black Order is, here's their names. If you don't know who this posse is hanging out with Thanos, and we got Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight, Black Dwarf, and of course Ebony Maw. And he was kind of the big Squidward part.
Kind of like his children. So I heard him say, "My children."
Well, he considers everybody his children. It's almost like a cult. It's like a cult. If you're in his circle, you are his children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about it.
What were the war dogs called? The outliers or whatever they are?
The little things that came out of the... I can't remember the name.
I call them war dogs because they're basically like dogs with like
little venom teeth. Little venom teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like venom heads slapped on a war dog, like a devil dog.
Well, guys, I can't believe... We could literally talk about this all night. And there's so many other things that we haven't even talked about. We didn't even cover Easter eggs, right? Lindsay, can you share with us maybe three Easter eggs right quick before we have to go off the air?
I threw out a couple during my review just to sneak those in there because I knew we were running short on time. But one that really stuck out to me was the White Wolf
reference. Now share that with me.
With Bucky, and you guys can help me speculate on this. I had read that the name... White Wolf was given to Bucky in Wakanda when we first meet him. And it's a name that was given to T'Challa's adopted brother, which was a Caucasian boy that was abandoned in Wakanda and was welcomed by the society and eventually rose to the highest position of Wakanda's security. Now, my question to you guys is this going to change his fate in the future storyline? Is he going to stay in Wakanda and rise as under the security and do the Wakanda thing, or is he going to take the shield of Cap like we've always predicted?
And that could be actually just nods to his previous lineage in the comics. And that's just the way the Russo brother is. They try to create every character and give proper pop culture nods to each one. And I don't think at this point nobody really knows the fate of Bucky, because we don't really know how Sebastian is going to sign on. Is he going to continue on? Is he ready to sign on for another four or five films to be able to create and man the shield of Captain America? Or is Falcon going to somehow return? Because both Falcon and Bucky wield the shield of Captain America. So nobody knows.
Maybe
right
it's
now.
Both.
Maybe I don't know.
Maybe he plays both roles.
Well, you have an agent. You have a secret agent who becomes part of that whole... A secret agent technically is Captain America. So we don't know.
Okay. I've got one more nugget and then I'll be completely done, I promise. Okay, so there is a song in the Guardians intro that they're both Star-Lord and Gamora are singing, and you know, the rest of them are tapping along. Rubber Band Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very first track that we're introduced to off of the MP3 player, the Yondu's playlist.
It is the very first
song that we get to hear off of Yondu's selection that he gave him at the end of
the MP3 Zune player. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's not on like volume 2 soundtrack or volume 3 soundtrack. It is specifically for this movie.
That is awesome.
So much.
My gosh.
Amazing.
So much detail.
So much.
Wow. Amazing.
All right, guys. Awesome, we're going to try to wrap this thing up, and we know this was a very meaty I mean, if we were an Italian family sitting around a table right now, we'd definitely be having some giant meatballs.
My daughter was wiping my tears off of my cheek.
But
saying, it's okay, Mama.
So, Austin Burke, if you want to go ahead and wrap us up here, man.
Wait, well, we gotta do scores real quick.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh.
Best scores.
All right. So I went first. So I'm gonna give this an astounding 9.5.
That's
because that was the number that echoed in the back of my brain when I walked out into the theater. From the theater into my car. I was like, man, that's an easy 9.5. And the more I started stewing on it, the more I was just like, you know what? That's a pretty solid for me. So I'm gonna go with official fresh PopX fresh 9.5. Mike, what's yours?
I'm going to go with a 9.8. I love this movie, and I foresee it clearing $1 billion before 7 days are up.
Let's hope so, man. Let's hope so. All right, 9.8, 9.5. Lindsay Badger?
9.7 for me.
Wow. Oh, I love that. We're on the high ends, boys.
My favorite.
9.7. Austin Burke, what is your final score?
Well, I'm going to be the Debbie Downer and give it a 9.3, which is, you know, that's still a fantastic, phenomenal score. Here's the thing. I gave that when I first watched the film for the first time. I feel like the more I rewatch it, the higher my score is going to go. We just have to catch up to that Civil War level of 35 watches. Once we get there, I'll know more. So,
but 9.3. Wait, 35 watches?
I've seen it 35 times.
My God.
I think he makes a tally mark in a little journal somewhere.
He's not wrong.
I'm done. On that note, Austin Burke, lead us into the outro, my friend. Boys. All right.
So, 35 times, not as much as other movies like Empire Strikes Back, but we'll get there. Yeah. Right now, I am Austin Burke at The Burkeinator. Just search and find me on the internet and check out all my spoiler reviews on YouTube and whatnot. We are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to gonageek.com. Check out some amazing podcasts on our home network.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And after you're there, you can find me, LR Badger. That's Lindsay Badger on the interwebs. It's LR Badger. If you're looking for PopX, we're everywhere too.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, Pinterest. All at PopXcast. And then if you want to send us an email, because you're cool like that, PopXcast@gmail.com is how you get there. Mm-hmm. And make sure you slide on through over by our website and check out all the archive, because we've got this show and every other show
75 more.
Is there. 75 glorious hour-plus shows for you to get your geek on with us.
Mm-hmm. And I am Joseph Burke at Joseph Burke Arts all over the internet. Now that's JOSEPHBURKEARTS. All right. So, and of course, hats off to amazing Team PopX. Now, seriously, guys, honestly, all four of you, all three of you, or all four of us, or yeah. Anyway, I guess honestly, we could consider Darth Baca our fourth. But anyway, like our fifth. But I'm just saying, hats off, and Mike Ippolito down here with the graphic love as always. He does it every week, week in and week out. We love you, Mike, and thank you so much for that. Looking forward to hanging with Mike. Oh my God, he just pulled a Falcor.
You know what? This show would not ever be as cool with Mike.
And I do have to give Mike some glory here, because when he comes down in just a week and a half, like 2 weeks, we are going to go to the Deadpool 2 premiere together. Yes.
Buddy.
So Mike, I get to see Infinity War with Austin, and I get to see Deadpool 2 with Mike. Life is awesome. Good, let me tell you. So hats off to Amazing Team PopX. That's it for this episode 76 of PopX Cast. Now join us back here on May the 20th. As we're going to dive into episode 77, the Deadpool 2 spoiler review and more. So that is it from all of us here at PopX Cast. Excelsior. All right. Thanks for listening, and thanks for downloading.
From everyone at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, all at PopX Cast. Get your geek on.